Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. So part of the reason that I was thinking about getting rid of this opening segment of news and stuff is that nothing interesting has been going on. I mean, there's like some gossipy shit from some of the shows that I watch, which like if you are into Dragula, the Boulay Brothers Dragula, which is airing its all-star season called Titans right now on Shudder and AMC Plus, which like I don't think anyone who listens, at least not who I know in real life, none of you even get Shudder or know what Dragula is. But if you are one of the other folks listening to this and you do enjoy Dragula, there is some shit going on behind the scenes, but like it's not news. Like it's all stuff that happened years ago that a lot of the queens who are on the show are just now starting to talk about. So I highly recommend a deep dive into that mess. And you can start with listening to this past week's episode of Spooky Seconds, which is Sloppy Seconds Dragula recap episodes. They come out on Fridays. It's Meatball, who was on season one of Dragula, and Big Dipper, who is a gay bear rapper and also is the producer of Alaska and Willem's podcast Race Chaser. They do a podcast together, and once a week they do interviews, and once a week they recap Dragula. And since Meatball was on the first season of Dragula and a lot of fans wanted her on Titans, she's finally addressing like why she will never go back on the show. And it's very interesting. It is messy as all hell. So go listen to their recap of episode 6, which came out, what day is that? December 1st. Go listen to that episode. It's a great place to start. Whew, that is some shit. But like, that's not news. It's all stuff that literally has been going on in their lives for years and years. We're just now being privy to it. And like the only real news story of the week is that an actor from Orange is the New Black, Brad William Henke, who was Piscatella, the crooked guard, he passed away in his sleep at the age of 56, which is sad. There's not like big moves being made, and there's nothing all that like fun to really be talking about. I feel like this time last year I was talking about all the people who were like canceling jobs because they didn't want to get vaccinated and shit. Although I do have a follow-up. Again, this is not really news. This is me being a petty bitch. I have follow-up on the Candace Cameron Bure, acting as the Grinch, Great American, I always had to stop and think, Great American Family channel bullshit. So we talked about this maybe last week, week before, where Candace Cameron Boring went on this press tour for her movie, A Christmas Present, I think it's called. A Charming Christmas Present, something like that. A Christmas Present, I don't know. There's an ellipsis in it. It's stupid title. Regardless, she was on a press tour for this movie and talking about how like she was only like their network was only going to focus on quote traditional marriage, and she was being a racist homophobic asshole basically. And her movie was airing that weekend, so it aired over Thanksgiving weekend on the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, and like all these press outlets are talking about how she left Hallmark and she was their queen of Christmas, and she had their highest rated movies, and she's making this new network that's competition. It's run by the old guard of Hallmark, and it's poached all these stars, and they're trying to come for Hallmark's Christmas crown. And I remember I said something on the podcast, or if I didn't, I should have, because I thought that like there is no competition, because Great American Family, like people don't even know that it exists. And we learned in 2020 and then again in 2022, just a few weeks ago, that despite winning the 2016 election, these like alt-right, uber conservative, hypocritical Christian value people are actually a very small number of the overall population. And now that the movie has aired, we have further proof of that like Great American Family does not exist as competition for Hallmark. You know what I mean? It's like saying that a horse and the fly on its ass are in competition for the like for the food that they're both trying. You don't like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, no. So this movie, A Christmas Present, aired the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, whatever date that was, and the ratings were atrocious. Only 462,000 people watched this movie. It got a 0.04 rating in the target demographic. That is terrible. Now, for reference, 462,000 people watched this. Candace Cameron Bure has 5.4 million followers on Instagram alone. So that's like saying that 5 million of her followers, which she had been promoting to ad nauseum for months, didn't tune in. Like, you failed. You have failed. We can put this to rest. There is no competition. And then to make it even funnier, over the weekend, Lacey Chabert, who I have said previously and who most sane people agree with me, is the actual Hallmark Queen of Christmas. Her movie aired over Thanksgiving weekend on Hallmark and was the biggest movie of the weekend and one of their biggest movies of the year. It didn't have as many viewers as Three Wise Men and a Baby, which I talked about last week, but it had a higher demographic rating, meaning that like more older people watched Three Wise Men and a Baby, but more younger people watched Haul Out the Holly, which was Lacey Chabert's movie. So like that was just chef's kiss. And then for even more, to make it even more embarrassing for Candace Cameron Boring, is that the, if you don't get that reference, it's Danny Pellegrino, Everything Iconic podcast. It's fucking hysterical. Go listen to it. Anyway, it aired head to head with Hallmark's most expensive production of the year, A Holiday Spectacular, which is like with the Rockettes, and Anne Margaret was in it, and Eve Plum from the Brady Bunch. And those two aired head to head, and five times as many people watched that as watched Candace Cameron Bure's movie on Gaff. Five times. It got a 0.2 rating. A 0.2. 0.04 for Candace Cameron Boring. It was the top rated, A Holiday Spectacular, was the top rated scripted program, original run scripted program of the night. The only things higher than it were sports, reality, and a promotional run of Tulsa King from Paramount Plus, which had already aired earlier in the day on Paramount Plus. There is no competition. This network might not even exist next year, to be completely honest, because they put all their eggs in the Candace Cameron Boring basket. That she was their big get, she was their big draw, they made her a friggin' executive. So if she can't draw in the crowd, if she can't market to her 5.4 million Instagram followers and get them to tune in, one, that tells you that her following is bought and it's bots and it's not real. Two, they made a mistake. And there's nothing they can do to fix this. Like, the dumbest thing that you can do in the year 2021, which is when they started, is launch a linear cable network. It is not profitable. You cannot garner ratings on a new network. Old people do not seek out, which is your target audience for a channel like Great American Family, do not seek out new things. They just don't. If there's a new show on CBS, though, they may watch it because they're already watching CBS. They're not looking for new channels. And then when you can't even tell them how to find it because they don't know how to use the internet, so you have to set up a hotline, or you're not available on their cable providers, like it just became available on Verizon a few weeks ago, Fios, like, you're stupid and you're bad at business. So that was fun. Okay, renewals and cancellations. This week, Tell Me Lies on Hulu got renewed for season two. So did Tulsa King on Paramount Plus, and so did Surface on Apple TV Plus. And The Midnight Club on Hulu, which I started and never finished. If you liked it, please let me know, because I got, I think, two or three episodes in, and like I loved the books when I was a teenager, or not a teenager. How old was I? Probably like 10 or 11. Anyway, I loved the books. Christopher Pike's books I always enjoyed when I was younger. So I wanted to watch this. And I made it, like I said, maybe two or three episodes in. And I stopped watching it because I just lost interest. I thought the episodes felt way too long. And I didn't really like any of the characters. I didn't really connect with the whole framing device. But it got canceled after one season and I never finished it. So, like, if it's worth finishing, please let me know. But then Mike Flanagan, who I love and who did the show, he did The Haunting of Hill House, The Haunting of Bly Manor, and Midnight Mass. Wonderful storyteller. Loved all of those shows. Couldn't get into this one. But he did a whole post, I haven't read it yet, a whole, like, interview thing where he basically talked about what season two was going to be about. So it kind of seems like they're not going to try to sell it elsewhere, even though he also signed a deal with Amazon. Like, Amazon poached him from Netflix to do overall productions. Like, maybe he could have tried to sell season two to Amazon, but he apparently is not going to, and just revealed everything that was going to happen. So if you liked the show, sorry, bye bye. But also, if you liked it, again, please let me know, like, does it get better? Because I was bored to tears by it. All right, let's talk about Housewives. I haven't talked about Housewives in a really long time. And, oh, not that long. I just realized I talked about Beverly Hills when its finale aired. Oh, well. Right now, we have Potomac and Salt Lake City airing. And this week, as of the week that this podcast releases, Miami is coming back to Peacock on Thursday, December 8th. And I don't know. I feel like at the beginning of this year, we were kind of in, like, a heyday of Housewives. Like, Beverly Hills, when the season first started, we were, like, super invested because of how things ended the season before. Salt Lake City, we had Jen Shah and her legal drama. Potomac was coming off of a really strong season. Jersey was coming off of a really strong season. Ultimate Girls Trip to the Berkshires had a really great season. Season one of Ultimate Girls Trip was so much fun. We had New York was on hiatus and they announced Legacy and was being recast for the regular series. And it just seemed like Miami had just come back. It seemed like we were in a really good place with Housewives. And my God, how the tables have turned since then. Beverly Hills, as you know, if you listen to my recap of that season, went straight down the toilet. It was on the air for 18 years, 134 episodes, and it was just so boring and repetitive and so hard to get through. So, bye. Now we had Salt Lake City, which I really was enjoying at the beginning of the season, but I'll get into why I'm not so much anymore, which is, like, very quickly going off the rails as well. Potomac, which is, like, embroiled in this controversy because of a fight that's happened on it, where, like, the fandom is not happy with some of the racial undertones of what's happening on that show. And it's just like, we're now in the Housewives are once again, as they they fly high and then they free fall. We're in the free fall right now. Let's start with Potomac, because I'm not going to go in depth because it's not my place, because it is Black people's business and I am not a Black person. So what is happening on Potomac, which Potomac is far and away my favorite of all of the Housewives franchise, and since season two of Potomac has been my favorite. I love it so much. Gisele Bryant is maybe my favorite housewife of any franchise, and I love the show. I think they are messy but truthful, and they throw shade and they fight, but then they still show up and film together and get along. And when the drama is dramatic, it is dramatic. I love it. I really do. This season, there is a fight that is currently happening, and there was a physical-ish altercation that happened a couple of weeks ago where Mia, who is the most recent addition to the cast and who was not a good choice, she should not have come back for a second season. Like, her whole storyline at the beginning of the season began with maybe she's lying about having cancer, and they've kind of, like, she just hasn't talked about it since they called her out for, like, oh, you said it might be cancer and then you haven't updated, like, is it cancer? And she's like, no, it's not cancer, but she never posted that or something. I don't fucking know. Basically, it's the Brooks of Orange County, but on a much smaller scale. And we're forgiving her for some reason. Anyway, Mia organize this girls' trip to Miami, and everyone is there except for Candace. She's coming, she comes in later. And everyone's kind of at odds over the house because not everyone gets their own bathroom, and there are like small rooms, some have to share rooms, and somehow Peter from Cynthia Bailey from Atlanta Housewives' ex-husband is involved in this drama. Like he was on a few episodes ago earlier in the season talking to Wendy about opening a lounge in Baltimore that she wants to do, and now they're in Miami eating at his bar and restaurant, and Mia is apparently friends with him. It's very confusing and incestual, and the fact that it's Peter Thomas of all people, who was the biggest bitch of all time on Atlanta Housewives, like all he ever wanted to do was be in the drama, and here he is once again on a new franchise in the drama. And he and Wendy had talked, and then he said to Mia that Wendy didn't tell him that she was going to be in Miami, and he was pissed at her. He said to Mia, tell Wendy I have beef with her. So then they get to the restaurant, and Mia talks to Peter, and Wendy says hi, and Peter like starts some shit without really starting some shit. And then Mia goes to be his surrogate and like get into Wendy's business and brings this whole thing up. And Wendy does what she does, where she like got heated and was poking the bear. And then Mia, because she does not have a chill bone in her body and does not know how to respond, dumps a drink on Wendy, and then, you know, Wendy starts calling her a whore, basically, and all this stuff, and Robin whips out her phone and starts filming it, and Giselle takes Mia's side, and basically, what's happening now is that there is this divide in the fandom, which I try to ignore because the Potomac fandom is very toxic, I think, personally, and I'm not invested in the fandom of any other, all the Real Housewives fandoms are crazy people. Like, if you have nothing better to do than live your life following the drama of people on a TV show, you don't have a life. You need to get a life. And I spend so much of my time blocking Bravo fan accounts on Twitter that somehow appear in my feed. It's maddening. But Potomac is especially, what's the word? It's not toxic. I mean, it is kind of toxic, but like they're very judgmental. And I also tend to disagree with them most. Like seasons ago when Monique assaulted Candace, and that one I have no problem calling assault because she like slammed Candace's head into a table, pulled her hair and was punching her face, and then chased her around a winery, like literally saying she was going to kill her. Assault. So much of the fandom was on Monique's side because they said Candace deserved it because she was running her mouth, because she was putting her finger in Monique's face. She had it coming. She was talking shit. And like basically hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tweets being like, talk shit, get hit. And now with this situation, that's not where we're going. Now we're all saying that Mia was in the wrong for throwing a drink. Not we all, the people on Twitter, the Potomac fandom are on Wendy's side, which if we're making connections, Wendy is the Candace and Mia is the Monique. So whereas everyone was on Monique's side before because Candace was asking for it, was Wendy not asking for it? Was she not poking the bear? Was she not provoking Mia? Was she? Wendy wanted that reaction. That is why you do this to people, is that you, like, why do you continue to prod and not move on and yell and scream over and call people names and stuff, is because you are provoking someone. Wendy wanted a reaction out of Mia and she got it. And then like, it's the same thing, like only worse, because I don't think that Candace wanted a reaction out of Monique, or at least not the reaction she got. But now all of a sudden everyone is on Wendy's side, which is just confusing to me. Like, why we're picking and shoot, like, sometimes, like, violence, physical violence is okay if you think that they were asking for it. But if in this case you don't think they were asking for it, it's not okay. It's very confusing. I don't like it. And it's turned into a situation where because Robin was filming it and Giselle took Mia aside, and Mia is lighter skinned than Wendy. Wendy is very dark skinned, that the fandom is turning it into a colorism issue, which there may be some issues of colorism underlying the way that the editing happens, the way that people are behaving on the show. I don't know their lives, that I can't speak on that. But what what a few seasons ago was, to me and many others, a very clear example of like violence and physical assault is being, and you know, like, but then was clouded by everyone, like these opinions of, well, if you just keep behaving this way over and over, of course you're going to get hit. Why was that the case then, but it's not the case now? And it's because of these accusations now of colorism, which is not new, on Potomac. They talked about it at the last reunion. Wendy, I think, even talked about it at the last reunion. So that's what's happening there. It is not all that entertaining to watch fights like that so much, I don't think. And also, I just don't like Charisse. She's not back on this season, and I feel like she's messy and annoying. But that there's that happening, and it's a slippery slope. So that's Potomac. But the one I really want to dive into is Salt Lake City, because this franchise is so very confusing to me. Because they came out of the gate swinging. This is already season 3 of Salt Lake City. Season 1 premiered beginning of 2020 or sometime in 2020, I think. And the first episode, if you watch Salt Lake City, which if you don't, I highly recommend going back because seasons 1 and 2 are wonderful television. They're like the epitome of why the Housewives are such entertaining TV after all of these years. And the first episode was Jen throwing this elaborate party for Meredith. It was Mary telling Jen, I don't like you because you smell like hospital. Jen accusing Mary of making fun of her aunt, which Mary then actually did, who had her legs amputated. Like, they came out of the gate swinging. And that whole season was just drama after drama after drama. And it was so entertaining. Then during season 2, we get Jen Shah's arrest. Like, on camera, we see the feds fucking pull up on the van, which I've talked about on the show as well. And now, after that season filmed, they jumped right back into filming season 3, which is what's currently airing Wednesdays at 8 o'clock on Bravo. And it was because they were anticipating, or at least I'm assuming it has to be, that they were anticipating getting Jen's trial or the prep for her trial on camera. Now, after they started filming, Jen's court dates got pushed back from when they were filming at the beginning of 2022 to July of 2022. So now, this is my theory, and based on what's been happening outside of the camera or off camera, I'm assuming it's true as well. My theory allegedly is that they were trying to film that the whole season was going to be about Jen going to trial and all the women reacting to it. And they were going to follow Jen. They were going to follow her prep. They were going to maybe follow like how she was reacting during the trial. And then all these alliances and friendships were going to be tested as they pertain to Jen and her potential prison time and what was happening at the trial. The trial gets pushed back, so they have to pivot. Now they're like, oh fuck, we have no storyline. We rushed into filming because we wanted to get all this on documented, and now it's not happening. So I think that now they had to come up with, reinvent, you know, like you can read this as they had to invent storylines for all of these women to make a series or a season of television that was not just a bunch of people who are not actually friends getting together for dinner or filming them separately when they have nothing to talk about, because the only thing that's happening is Jen's trial and that's no longer happening. So now it's like, okay, well, what the fuck are they supposed to do? Talk about how in 3-4 months she's going to go to trial? So based on some text messages that cast members have been leaking, I think that they invented a whole shitload of drama and it's backfiring because it feels produced and it feels fake and it feels invented. And as much as I find these women entertaining, because in a lot of ways, like the beginning of the season, I was all in. I loved the first few episodes because to me, Salt Lake City is very much like a sitcom in a lot of ways. Like it feels scripted almost, which goes along with this, like, we had to invent storylines, which I didn't mind at the beginning that it felt scripted, because it was funny and it was crazy and it was like, it was still kooky and entertaining. But the longer it goes on where there's nothing happening and we keep returning to the same well, it's losing its luster. And I don't know if it's because they burned so bright so quickly that they're like, it's like a star, right? It's a shooting star where it's like very impressive going across the sky and all of a sudden it's gone because it burns itself out. Maybe that's what's happening with the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Not entirely sure. What I do know is that I am no longer on board for this repetitive drama. Part of it is that no one is talking about Jen's court case. They discussed it on an earlier cast trip in the season, and that's it. Like, Jen is acting out so absurdly. In this most recent episode, she wanted the best room in this house on their trip to San Diego, which I also loved that Whitney in her confessional was like, oh great, another domestic trip because Jen can't leave the country, which, hysterical. Sometimes when they break the fourth wall, it's worth it, like that. But then Jen wants the best room, and she's always gotten the best room on trips, including the one they went on earlier, because they all felt bad that she was, because at this point, I think she was scheduled to go to trial soon, and then they push it back, that she might be going to prison, that she's going to trial, whatever. And then she didn't get the best room on this trip because a friend of organized a trip, which, again, confusing. Why is someone who is not a full-time housewife hosting a trip? We all know the trips are fake. We all know production takes care of it all, but we still pretend decades later that, like, this is not the case. But we're pretend, whatever. Why are you giving it to Angie K to host? There are two friend of Angie's this year, Angie H, Angie K. They're both messes. Angie K at least is bringing drama, but that's neither here nor there. Why are you giving a friend of hosting privileges? Was Angie K supposed to be a full-time housewife and for some reason then just didn't become one? I don't know, but she takes the best room and Jen is pissed off that she didn't get it. So Jen pours a drink on Angie's head. Now, as I just said, that led to a whole shitstorm over on Real Housewives of Potomac. On Salt Lake City, Jen pours the drink and then just moves on with her life and keeps talking about it and is like, I was joking. I was joking. I was light in the mood because everyone was mad and confused by you because of how you were handling the rooms. Like, no, Jen, that was you. You were the only one who was angry and confused. No one else was. But also, how did that turn into, why is that physical assault on Potomac but a joke on Salt Lake City? Makes no sense. And I'm Team Angie here. Jen is crazy. But, like, also no one said anything. No one said, Jen, what the fuck are you doing? Get out of here. You can't do that. They all just watched it happen and were like, oh. Meredith did a confessional and said, so Angie doesn't like having things poured on her. Noted. Are you fucking kidding me? Meredith, what would you do if someone poured a drink on your head? Would you expect everyone to sit there and be like, oh, I guess she doesn't like things being poured on her? What is wrong with you people? It's so wild and makes no sense. And it leads to this whole petty drama where Jen and Angie are now at each other's throats, even though they came into the trip planning it together and being allies. And Angie, who threw a party at her house for Jen's husband, Coach Shaw, earlier in the season, starts talking about how Jen never reimbursed her for that party and she spent $15,000, but then she's reading the receipts and I'm pretty sure they added up to much more than $15,000. So either she was lowballing the 15 or she was making up the numbers in the invoices, one or the other. And then it culminates in this fight at the end of the episode in a limousine or a sprinter van, or probably a sprinter van because it's Salt Lake City and all they do is fight in sprinter vans or get arrested in sprinter vans. Turns into this whole thing where Angie accuses Jen of not paying for the party she says in a confessional, this was juicy, that the thing that Jen is on trial for or about to be on trial for is scamming people out of money. And that's what she did to Angie with the party. Like, insert Law and Order sound here. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun. Like, that, whew. I need more of that energy from everyone across the board when it comes to Jen Shah, because it's fucking true. And this is before she pled guilty. That's the other thing with this season. I'm all over the place. I'm sorry. I have so many feelings. Is that Jen, in every episode, is yelling, I'm fighting for my life. I only have my family. This might be my last birthday. Before I... She's screaming and yelling, I'm innocent. I'm innocent. I'm innocent. Literally screaming and yelling, I'm innocent. Every episode. And we know full well that after they stopped filming, she pled guilty to all of these charges. And once again, why Bravo fandoms are psychotic, you will find lots of fans saying things like innocent people plead guilty all the time. Not in this case, they fucking don't. Not when there are rich people who are on trial for white collar crimes, they don't. This is not a poor, like a poor drug addict somewhere in an inner city who has been arrested a bunch of times and is about to go to jail for a drug charge, but this is the one time he didn't do it, so he just pleads guilty because he knows he'll be found guilty anyway because he's a drug addict. Like, that's not what this is. That she's fucking guilty. Sorry about it. And all these people are like, she's innocent until proven guilty. Well, she fucking pled guilty. So you can't just, like, change your argument about why you want her to stay on TV because you find her interesting because she's out of her mind. Like, sorry about it. Anyway, like, that's some juicy shit when Angie is saying this is what she's about to go to jail for and she's doing it to me too. That's fun. I want more of that from everyone on this show. I need everyone on the show to talk about Jen's legal issues because the specter of it hovers over every moment of this show. The reason they're in San Diego and not somewhere more fun and exotic is because Jen can't leave the country. The reason they went to Arizona at the beginning of the season is because Jen can't leave the country. So this whole trip, all this fighting can be traced back to the fact that, like, well, Jen, if you weren't on trial, maybe we could have gone to the Maldives. Or maybe we could be in Mexico right now. But we're in San Diego in this, you know, weird contemporary thing that Lisa Barlow says looks like Santorini and she wants someone to feed her grapes. We're not in actual Santorini because you can't leave the country. Like, I wish people would just start saying these things to her. I wish they would talk to her about it. I wish these conversations were happening because we need that. And instead, we're getting this manufactured drama of, I'm going to pour a drink on your head because I don't like that you're acting like you're too big for your britches or whatever. I just turned into my grandmother when I said that. Sorry about it. That's not interesting. Like, having these side characters making up drama and being mad at each other. Like, Jen is mad at Dana for talking shit. And Dana's a friend of Meredith's, I guess. And Dana's like, yeah, I talked shit. You're on trial. Like, why can't we just say that? Like, it's not talking shit when you're just talking about the news. And the news is that Jen Shah is about to be on trial for scamming the elderly. And then on top of it, we never even got the trial because she just pled guilty. So now the news is Jen Shah has pled guilty. Now would be the time for them to be filming this season. And I don't know why Bravo didn't stop and think about it, because this is what happened with Beverly Hills last season, is that they dove right into a new season. They started filming right away because of Erica Jane and her legal problems with her divorce and with Tom. And they did this, and then nothing came of that season because they were just spinning their wheels. Same shit is happening now. Why didn't they learn? Why didn't they learn? I don't know if it's because the season hadn't aired to Beverly Hills yet, so they couldn't be like, oh shit, they turned on us. I don't know. But never do this again, Bravo. Never do it again. Take a breather. Stop. So, like, that's my biggest issue. But then on top of that, it's just that no one, even the people I like, is likable this season. I love Heather Gay. I think she is a top-tier housewife already. But she just comes across as trying too hard. It feels like between her and Whitney, because, again, in my theory, that this whole season was going to be filmed around Jen's trial and their feelings. Now they don't have that. They stepped up to be like, okay, we're going to fight. And that's going to be our story. And Heather is just, When I said it felt sitcom-y, Heather feels scripted a lot of times. And at least she knows how to deliver a funny one-liner and a punchline. So it, even if it is scripted, it's fun to watch. Whitney does not. So a lot of her scripted reads and stuff, it feels awkward a lot of the time. And she's just holding on to the story of, like, I'm leaving the Mormon church and I'm on a healing journey, because she has a Utah accent and healing and feeling sounds like healing and filling. And it's just, she's fighting with Heather, who's her ride or die. And I think Heather's not invested in the storyline of her fighting with Whitney. So Heather's like, okay, we fought. We're good now. Like, we gave them that storyline. Let's move on. And Whitney's like, no, we have to keep going. But, like, maybe they didn't communicate. So Whitney thinks they're fighting, but Heather doesn't. It's so awkward. And Whitney just comes across as so fake, because between this, like, she has this whole storyline this season where she's, like, dealing with past trauma that's been unveiled through, I guess, hypnotherapy, maybe, where she's uncovered repressed memories, which are real. I believe in them. That's not what I'm saying with this, but she seems to be exploiting these memories of childhood abuse for the camera, which feels a little icky. And this whole healing journey that she's on is very private. Like, things like that are very personal. So whenever anyone on a TV show goes through something really deep and emotional and is dealing with past trauma and reliving that past trauma, it feels very forced and very fake and very dishonest when they're crying on camera. Like, Whitney had a whole store episode where she called people to her house and had cameras there and broke down about uncovering these memories in therapy of being abused as a child. And she's crying into her husband's shoulder. And I believe all of these things. That's not what I'm saying. But when you do it on camera and you say, this happened earlier today, like, it's not like the therapy sessions on camera. You reopened that wound for TV. And that feels gross. So between that and the Jen Shah, and, like, Meredith is just a hypocrite. And she's like, she had this whole thing with, like, where Lisa went off on a hot mic moment last season and called Meredith a garbage whore. And they're supposed to be friends. And Meredith's like, well, I don't go around telling people about all the rumors I hear about your marriage, like how you're cheating on your husband. I don't say that. Oops, except I just did. Like, it's so annoying. If you're going to take the high road, take the high road. But that's not taking the high road. That's going lower than the low road. To be like, well, I never talked about your cheating rumors, except right now. Like, it's you trying to be holier than thou, but also going lower because you're trying to be holier than thou. It's gross. I hate it. Whenever anyone does it in life or on TV, it's annoying. And that's all that we're getting this season. It's a bunch of these, like, overplayed storylines. It's all over the place. Like, all this drama, the Meredith and Lisa drama seems to just either be forgotten. Maybe it's forgiven. I don't know. Because Meredith is, like, a non-entity in the past couple episodes. Lisa had, like, two lines in the most recent episode. This was the Angie K episode. And Angie K isn't a fucking housewife. She's a friend of. I'm so confused by the show right now. And it really does feel like producers, story editors, whomever, are scrambling. Because whatever their plans were got thwarted. And now there's all this drama happening off the show of Angie Harrington, who is the other Angie friend of, saying that she didn't want to go on this cast trip. And then Whitney saying, you asked everyone if you could go and no one invited you. And they're posting screenshots of texts from each other. And it's like, it's exhausting trying to keep up with this, like, unimportant, uninteresting drama, but they have to do it because nothing happening on the show right now is all that interesting. And that's sad because, like I said, the first two seasons burned bright and fast and hot. I loved it. And I even, like I said, love the beginning of this season. It just has become kind of a chore to sit through. I don't like it. Premieres and finales this week. We're getting real close to Christmas, so not a whole lot going on. On Monday, the season 3 premiere of His Dark Materials on HBO, and this new celebrity game show hosted by Blake Shelton, I think, on USA premieres called Barmageddon, where it's like a bunch of Blake Shelton celebrity friends hang out in his bar and play games. Boo. Cool. On Tuesday, Paramount Plus has this new reality show called The Checkup, with I think it's a psychiatrist or psychotherapist, something like that, and it's a bunch of celebrities just like basically going to therapy for an hour. Wednesday, the season 4 premiere on Netflix of Too Hot to Handle. On Thursday, season 4 premiere of Doom Patrol on HBO Max, and season 3 on HBO Max of Southside. And Million Dollar Listing LA returns to Bravo, which they could probably just go back to calling Million Dollar Listing, considering they've canceled all the other franchises at this point. On Friday, season 2 of Little America premieres on Apple. And on Sunday, Dirty Jobs is back on Discovery, which I didn't realize they were still making episodes of that show, but here we are. Finales: Mysterious Benedict Society on Disney Plus. Monarch, good chance that's going to be a series finale because it is not doing well. On Fox, the series finale of Stargirl on the CW, The Amazing Race, Reginald the Vampire on Sci-Fi, Family Law on the CW ends its first season. Don't know what the fuck that show is, but there we have it. The White Lotus ends on HBO, which I think next week's episode might be late, and I'll just do a whole episode after I've watched The White Lotus. I'm thinking that might be what I do. So maybe that'll come out on like Monday or Tuesday. I'm not sure yet. And then Let the Right One In on Showtime and Holiday Wars on Food Network all have finales this week. Okay. My countdown to Christmas Hallmark movie recommendations. So last week we got approximately 324 Hallmark Christmas movies because it's Thanksgiving weekend. That's not only a little bit off. And for the most part, I was underwhelmed by these movies. And kind of like with Lights, Camera, Christmas, it's this week, this is going to be kind of like a by default recommendation. So the movies we got were My Southern Family Christmas, starring Bruce Campbell, Hashtag Xmas, A Royal Corgi Christmas, A Tale of Two Christmases, Haul Out the Holly, which is a Lacey Chabert movie I mentioned earlier, A Christmas Cookie Catastrophe, and A Holiday Spectacular again, which is the Rockettes one. Now, I had high hopes for A Holiday Spectacular. They started promoting this back in July when they were doing their Christmas in July shit. And I was so stoked. I love Anne Margaret. Obviously, I am gay. Eve Plum, Jan Brady, you know, it's Broadway, it's New York, it's a period piece, it's the Rockettes, I'm a dancer, I can't wait. It was so boring. They did not utilize anything to the best of their ability. And not only that, they did a disservice to the Rockettes by making them seem more progressive than they were. Like, it was a fully integrated line, which didn't happen with the Rockettes until like I am older than the Rockettes have had black members on their chorus line. Like, I was born at the beginning of 88 and they didn't integrate their line until the end of 88, which is just crazy to think about. But this movie takes place in the 50s, the mid 50s, early 50s. And there's a black chorus line member on the Rockettes who has been dancing with them for 10 years. No, don't give them credit. They don't deserve it. Because, and like, if this had been not the Rockettes, like if they had used the Rockettes but called them something else, I wouldn't have minded as much. But it's the Rockettes. The Rockettes are playing the Rockettes. Say Rockettes again. Rockettes. And that was weird. There was not enough dancing. There was not enough Anne Margaret. It was weird. It was a weird movie. And again, I wanted to love it. And also, this is some insider shit. Steven DeRosa, who played the love interest father who owned the company that he wanted the son to take over. I know Steven DeRosa, not like well or anything, but one of my friends when I was in college is friends with him. And I went to his Christmas party maybe 15 years ago, I want to say at this point, in Yonkers. And met him. He was very lovely, opened his home very warmly to all of us, and met some like other Broadway folks, some directors, some TV movie celebrities, and would have loved to have gone to the Christmas party this year just to get some insider shit on this. And even with him in it, I couldn't really recommend this movie. So that was me just bragging for a second. You're welcome. So that's what I thought was going to be my favorite, was A Holiday Spectacular. And actually what it ended up being was probably a, like, I liked A Royal Corgi Christmas. I'm not going to lie. I really did. It was adorable. The dogs were so cute. Hunter King from Life in Pieces, Joey King's sister, was in it. I thought she was very charming. It was a very standard Royals movie, which I don't typically enjoy. So putting the dog in it kind of was a great way for me to worm my way into kind of warming, worm my way into warming, to warming up to a Royal movie. And that one was cute, but like nothing special. And then Haul Out the Holly is what I'm going to actually recommend, which is Lacey Chabert, Wes Brown, Melissa Peterman. And it's basically Christmas with the Cranks, but make it Hallmark. And now Christmas with the Cranks is a very divisive Christmas movie. I love it, even though I know it's wretched. It's a terrible movie, but I really enjoy it. And Haul Out the Holly kind of plays with that, where they know that they are making a purposefully not good movie, and they're kind of winking at it. Like, it's part satire in a way. They're, part of it is that they're sending up the idea of Hallmark Christmas movies and how absurd they are. So Lacey Chabert plays a woman who goes home for the holidays to, I think it's Arizona, and goes to her family's house on this little cul-de-sac, Evergreen Lane, I think it was. And her parents are like, psych, we're going to Florida, have fun. You have to do all the Christmas shit, because they're like the head of the HOA, which is not how HOA works, where like they force everyone to decorate for Christmas. But that's not the point. And she basically, like, even though she just broke up with her boyfriend, who was a total douchebag loser, she wants to just like stew. But instead, she's reunited with a childhood friend who is now who I guess is maybe the head of the HOA, or like he just randomly gives out citations for their nutcracker not being big enough and shit like that. And she has to join the neighbors in decorating for Christmas and hosting all these Christmas events. And, you know, she's a little scroogey about it, but they force her out of her funk and into the Christmas spirit, kind of. Not an original story at all. But the way they go about it is very much like sending up this very traditional, very commonplace Hallmark storyline. And it's very funny. Stephen Tobolowsky, who plays Ned, a neighbor, is very funny. I feel like the director was just like, just improvise. He's hysterical. Melissa Peterman is very funny. There are some really great cameos. Again, this Hallmark cinematic universe has expanded. Eric Mabius, who is in the Signed, Sealed, Delivered movies, is in it. Christopher Palaha, who is in a whole shit ton of these movies and was in We Wish You a Merry Christmas earlier this year, is also makes a little appearance. It was a lot of fun. It makes no sense. Like, if you think about it at all. I was going to say if you think about it too hard, but no, if you think about it at all, it makes no sense. But it also is just funny. Like, it's a fun way to spend an hour and 25, 30 minutes, whatever it ends up being, with commercials. And that, I feel like, was missing from some of the other Hallmark movies over Thanksgiving, was that they weren't fun. They were just kind of boring. Or they were, like, melodramatic. There are a lot of movies this year that are just about people lying to each other. And that's what a lot of these movies were over. Like, the other one I liked-ish was My Southern Family Christmas, but it was just a whole movie about someone lying until the last, like, 3 minutes. Yeah, weird. Or, like, people, like, even in this one, it's her parents and the whole town are, like, maybe trying to set them up, which is weird, which was also used in We Wish You a Merry Christmas and was also used in Christmas Cooking Catastrophe this weekend. Like, it's just, it's weird. It's weird that Hallmark, like, keeps, like, as much as they're progressing, they're also, like, returning to this well very often of these same tropes and, like, sometimes in the very same weekend. It's just, it's strange. So Haul Out the Holly is my Hallmark Canada Christmas recommendation of the week. And I think that's all that I have for you. So thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week. Like I said, I'm thinking I'm going to do a season recap of The White Lotus Season 2. So instead of releasing on Monday, maybe it'll come out on like Tuesday or Wednesday. And yeah, and then that might be my last like regular episode. And then I'll do like a Christmassy kind of like I did last year, recap / final recommendation of Countdown to Christmas the week after, because then it's Christmas. So I'll be going on another mini little hiatus. Okay. All right. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week with more news, more recaps, more reviews, more analyses, and more recommendations. Have a good week, everyone.